Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Girivaradhari. Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Girivaradhari. Yashoda Nandana Vrajana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vrajana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunda Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Girivaradhari. Yashoda Nandana Vrajana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vrajana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Radha Madhava Shri Radhe. Jaya Prabhupada 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 Srila Prabhupada. Jam Vishwapad Paramahansa. Parayam Vishwapad Paramahansa Parivachari Astata Sashimad A.C. Bhaktivanta Swami Shri Prabhupada Ki Arantakodi Vaishnavrinda Ki Tagore Premanande. All grace assembled devotees, all grace assembled devotees, all grace assembled devotees, all grace Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga Osha Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam mudiraye nasta preshu bhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavatya uttama shloke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtaki. So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 22, verse number 9. Priyavartana pa. Priyavartano, Priyavratotana Pado. Swaseyam duhita mama. Anvichati patim yuktam. Vaya shila gunadibi. Priyavratotana Pado. Swaseyam duhita mama. Anvichati patim yuktam. Vaya shila gunadibi. Priyavratto tatana pado. Swaseyam duhita mama. Anvichati patim yukta. Vaya shila gunadibi. Please chant. Priyavratto tana pado. Swaseyam duhita mama. Vaya shila gunadibi. Priyavratto tana pado. Swaseyam duhita mama. Anvichati patim yuktam. Vaya shila gunadibi. Priyavratto tana pado. Swaseyam duhita mama. Anvichati patim yuktam. Gunadibi. Priyavratto tana pado. Swaseyam duhita pama. Anvichati patim yuktam. Vaya shila gunadibi. Priyavratto tana pado. Swaseyam duhita mama. Anvichati patim yuktam. Vaya shila gunadibi. Let's do the word to it. Priyavratta uttana pado. Of Priyavratta and uttana pada. Swasa, sister. Iyam, this. Duhita, daughter. Mama, my. Anvichati, is seeking. Patim, husband. Yuktam, suited. Vaya shila guna adibi. By age, character, good qualities, etc. Translation. My daughter is the sister of Priyavratta and Uttanapad. She is seeking a suitable husband in terms of age, character, and good qualities. Purported by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami Srila Prabhupada. The grown-up daughter of Swayambhuva Manu, Devahuti, had good character and was well qualified. Therefore, she was searching for a suitable husband, just befitting her age, qualities, and character. The purpose of Manu's introducing his daughter as a sister of Priyavratta and Uttanapad, two great kings, was to convince the sage that the girl came from a great family. She was his daughter, and at the same time the sister of Kshatriyas. She did not come from a lower class family. Manu therefore offered her to Kardama as just suitable for his purpose. It is clear that although the daughter was mature in age and qualities, she did not go out and find her husband independently. She expressed her desire for a suitable husband corresponding to her character, age, and quality. And the father himself, out of affection for his daughter, took charge of finding such a husband. Om Gyanate Manandasya Ganandana Shalaka Chakshurum Nantinayana Tasmai Shri Guru Namaha. So, yeah, so Sambhu Manu is telling Kardamuni, yeah, my daughter is, she's seeking you as, she's seeking a suitable husband. And in Bhagavatam, actually, next verse is described how Narada Muni actually had told Devahuti about Kardamuni. And he had told her how, you know, he's such a qualified husband, to-be husband, and such a qualified person. And that's how she learned about him. And she told her father that, you know, I want to marry this person, Kardamuni, and he's so qualified. And that's when Sambhu Manu is here approaching Kardamuni. And this all fits into the whole bigger scheme of how Kardamuni was given that service, that yeah, he has to help with, helping with the, to be a progenitor, you know, to fill the universe. And so it's all part of the of Krishna's plan. And Sambhu Manu, like any good father, is doing his duty here. He was searching for a good husband for his daughter. And, you know, it's like a daughter said, well, this person is so qualified, I want to marry him. And so, of course, he also knows that Kardamuni is qualified. But yeah, but he goes there, sees the groom, the groom-to-be. And so like any good father, and especially the Kshatriya, is doing his duty. And in the Bhagavatam also it's explained how one cannot be a father, one cannot be a mother, one cannot be a guru if they can't deliver their dependents back to Godhead. And yeah, this verse is just so pertinent to it because he's here making sure that his daughter marries a great devotee. And Sambhu Manu, when he went out to see Kardamuni, you know, I was thinking about how he's, you know, the things he's looking for, you know, he's looking for the character of Kardamuni. And when we go and meet someone, when we evaluate a person, you know, what is it that we should really look for? And he wasn't, what he saw wasn't riches. He didn't see any luxurious palace. He didn't see any of that. But he saw a devotee of high caliber and of great character. And so, yeah, when we also go out there, when we meet people, you know, that's what we look for. We look for good qualities in a person. When we want to be friends with somebody, when we want to invite somebody in our inner circle, that's what we look for. We look for, you know, is this person trustworthy? Is this what, you know, what is their track record? In Kardamuni's case, he had a very high track record. He had the darshan of Lord Vishnu himself. And Narada Muni, and that's another thing we often look for, actually, especially, of course, when it comes to marriage. But even in general, if we want to be close with somebody, if we want to enter, say, business with somebody, we want to know what's their track record. We want to know, have recommendations. And he had the highest recommendation from Narada Muni. And I was thinking about another time when Narada Muni recommended somebody for marriage. Anyone remember when was the other time in the Bhagavatam when Narada Muni recommended a girl? Like, oh, you should marry this person. Rukmini. And he told Rukmini, oh, Krishna is, you know, well, Krishna is so beautiful. He told all the characteristics of Krishna. And then, of course, she obviously very, very soon fell in love with Krishna. And then she wanted to marry Krishna. That was another instance. I couldn't find any other instances. But I was thinking, Narada Muni, that's his service. He always instigates these things so that the service to Krishna happens more rapidly, right? And it doesn't matter, you know, it doesn't matter what it is. He's also willing to arrange marriages. He's in the renounced order. He's in the renounced order. That's normally not a role for a person in the renounced order to, you know, to arrange marriages or suggest someone you should marry. But of course, for him, whenever it is for service, he's willing to do anything, you know, and suggest to a girl, you know, this is a nice husband. But it's all in the light of service. And so that was Narada Muni telling Devahuti. And Devahuti, she could have picked anyone for marriage. But she herself was a strong character. Yeah, when a person is of strong character, then they're able to easily see strong character in other, or they're able to notice who is a person of strong character. Whatever we have in our hearts, that's what we normally see. So if our hearts is full of faults, then we'll see faults in everybody else. Or whatever fault we have, then we're able to see that. And so a person of Devahuti and Sambhu Manu, they are of good character themselves. So they're able to very easily recognize Sambhu Manu, that this person is of strong character and of good qualities. And I was thinking about the verse in the third canto itself, where Kadamuni is speaking. Kapiladeva is speaking, and he gives that famous verse, the qualities of a sadhu, tittikshava karanika. That, yeah, a sadhu is sober, he's tittikshava, he's tolerant, he's merciful, and he's friendly to all living entities. So those are the characteristics of a devotee and of somebody of high caliber, that, yeah, they're tolerant, they're merciful to other living entities, they're always thinking of the welfare of others. And Kardamuni and other such sages, they've always thought about the welfare of others, and that's the nature. And even Narada Muni, he's always going around preaching and bringing different people to Krishna consciousness. And again, he's in the renounced order, but he knows how to preach. He knows where a person is at and what to say to which person. And the prime example of that was that that hunter, Megari. And when he met Megari, he asked him, "What are you doing?" Because he saw all these half-dead animals. So he asked him, what is going on? So Megari said, I'm a hunter and I kill these animals. So the first thing Narada Muni told him was that, he didn't tell him stop hunting, go chant Hare Krishna, and do japa. He told him, well, if you have to kill the animals, don't half kill them, just kill them. And that was the first thing he said, because he saw that this person, and Megari in that instance, he was a hunter, he was an outcast. And when Narada Muni actually came to Megari, Megari was a little taken aback because he was an outcast. So what to speak of sages, even regular people would really not want to see him or cross his path. And whenever there is, you definitely don't want to cross a path, a hunter's path, because a hunter doesn't, normally when hunters shoot, they just see some movement and then they just shoot. And so normally people wouldn't come, want to come across a hunter. But Narada Muni was kind enough and he was bold enough to approach Megari. And then Megari was just surprised that there's this sage who's approaching me. And Narada Muni kindly, he met him where this person was at, Megari. He just told him, just at least stop killing them. And then he preached him further, and then slowly he told him, and just give up hunting completely. And then Megari was like, well, what am I going to do? It's like, don't worry, just don't worry. Food will come, don't worry. So, and next time when Narada Muni came and saw Megari, and it wasn't, his first question again wasn't that, oh, well, are you doing your sadhana or what are you, how is your Krishna consciousness? His first question was, how are you doing? Are you getting enough food? And he said, Guru Maharaj, I have more than enough. Please tell these people to stop sending me food. Because the people had seen by now that Megari has changed so much, he's become so saintly, so they were sending so much bhoga for offerings and sending all the foods that he needed. So he had more than enough. But to the point that, elevated devotees, they care about all aspects of everybody. They, it's not just they just go, don't go out just guns blazing and telling everybody that they're in Maya and so forth. So Narada, and also an expert preacher like Narada Muni, he knows what to say when and how to really instigate. And sometimes he did go guns blazing, actually. There was a king, I'm forgetting which the king's name, but it starts with a P. Anyways, he was doing a lot of killing a lot of animals. Does anyone remember the name of that king? It's in the Bhagavatam. And but then he tells him an allegory. What? Prachini Barishad, right? Prachini Barishad. And he starts telling him an allegory about this other king who was also sacrificing or killing a lot of animals and so forth. So yeah, he's always very expert. Of course, finally Prachini Barishad, he finally understood, he's talking about me, so I should mend my ways. So Narada Muni is very expert in preaching and how to say what to say to the specific person. That's the mood of a preacher. And of course, we see in our line also, all the previous acharyas, Prabhupada and so forth, they all were very expert in when to say what and how to whom. And for us also, it's a great example. And the super soul within also inspires a devotee who is Krishna conscious and who goes out with the heart of kindness and sharing Krishna with others. Then the super soul in the heart inspires a devotee to speak in such a way that is pleasing, that is beneficial to the audience, to the person who's listening. And that's the beauty of Krishna consciousness. And I feel like a lot of us, a lot of devotees here, I'm sure, have experienced that, that yeah, just Krishna inspires us to speak in a way that then inspires the other person. And it's really, you know, sometimes, yeah, we go out and preach and we say some things and then we come back like, oh, I can't believe I said that. It's amazing. It's amazing that it came out of my mouth. And then you just feel like, well, Krishna must have just spoken through me, you know. There's no way that I just thought of this on my own. So yeah, it all does come from Krishna, and Krishna inspires us. And when Dhruva Maharaj, when he saw Krishna, when he saw Vishnu, he was just a boy, so he didn't know what to say. He didn't know any specific prayers he could say. And so at that point, when Lord Vishnu touched his head with the conch shell, so it's kind of the same way with us also. Krishna touches us, and through his touch, we're able to speak, you know, something that's beneficial for others and something that's uplifting. And but when Krishna does not inspire us, when Krishna, for one reason or the other, like Arjuna, when he was coming back with the queens from Dwarka after Krishna had left, when Krishna does not want to empower, then even the greatest warriors, even the greatest orators, they lose their speech and their skills. And, you know, sometimes that happens, and sometimes Krishna does that. And sometimes Krishna does that for us to remember from whom empowerment really comes. And even the battlefield, when Krishna was taking the queens back, he could not fight these tribal men who were attacking to kidnap the queens. And even in the Mahabharata war, it described how at one point Krishna just, when he got off the chariot, when Arjuna's chariot, then the whole chariot just fell apart. So it's Krishna really just holding it all together. Just a quick side story. There was one time Amal Bhakta Maharaj, he was in D.C., and he was speaking on this point that, you know, and you all know, right? He has those recordings. He has made all these beautiful recordings of the Bhagavatam and the CC and other books. And he's quite talented in that. And he told me that he had studied to be a radio operator back in, like, a while ago when he was much younger and before he met the devotees. So that's how he knew all these skills, how to, you know, read a book in that way. And so he used it, right? And then he was giving a class, and he made this point, yeah, if Krishna inspires you, empower somebody, then, you know, then you can speak beautifully, you can, you know, and he was talking about his recordings. And his health was a little weak that time, so, and he spoke for a little further, and then all of a sudden, I don't know what happened, but he just couldn't speak. Like, he just started speaking gibberish, and he had to calm down a bit, and then he was like, see, Krishna has proved my point. If Krishna empowers, you can speak beautifully. But when Krishna takes it away, you just speak gibberish like I just did. And it was just so mind-blowing. Krishna, and we were all happy that is, but nothing happened to him. He was fine. But it was just like, wow, it's amazing to see how Krishna, you know, acts through a great devotee. So I'll never forget that incident. But yeah, when Krishna empowers, then yeah, we can speak beautifully. So here also, you know, this is all happening through Krishna's arrangement. And Swayambhuva Manu, he's not only a father, but he's a Kshatriya. And so he's doing his duty of protecting his daughter, making sure she's well settled. And that verse in the Bhagavatam, sorry, in the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna himself says, he's Bhoktaram Yagyatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram Suhrida Sarvadehinam Gyatvamam Shanti Mrityati, that I'm the Bhoktaram, I'm the enjoyer of everything, and everything is under me. Sarva Loka Maheshwaram, I'm the Lord of everything. And I'm the best friend of everybody else, Surida Sarvadehinam. And one who knows that gets peace. And so Krishna is the ultimate protector, and he's the ultimate provider. And so when we have that realization, then we're peaceful, you know, then there's complete peace. And you know, sometimes, and that's the nature of the Kshatriyas also, they also provide, you know, and those who are in charge of somebody, that comes from Krishna, that mood of like, yeah, we are here to protect and provide. So that mood of like, not that we are the Lord of everything, but, you know, we are the caretakers. But that comes from Krishna, that mood. And the best Krishna conscious way to use that mood is, yeah, let me provide, give shelter to this person so that they come closer to Krishna. Whoever our dependent is, be it our spouse, be it our elderly parents, or be it our young kids, you know, that's the mood that, yeah, I'm here, somehow I'm the caretaker, and I'm the proprietor of some some resources, but let me do my best to help this living entity under my care to go back to Godhead. And that comes directly from Krishna, because he is the proprietor of everything, Lord of everything. And but when one is not Krishna conscious, then one then misuses that identity. They say, oh, I'm the Lord of everything, and you better do what I'm saying. And when a person is not Krishna conscious, when, you know, Kshatriyas aren't Krishna conscious, when caretakers aren't Krishna conscious or God conscious, then they just, you know, they just focus on that. Yeah, I'm the Lord of everything. You know. So I was reflecting, how many times have I ever thought about, you know, if this person would just listen to me, then it will be peaceful. You know, and I was thinking, I'm sure every person has thought of that at some point in their life. If they would just listen to me, if they would just do what I am saying, then there'll be peace. And the funny thing, then everybody thinks that, and then there is no peace, right? And that comes from that tendency. You know, I was reflecting how that comes from that verse. That yeah, if they think that we think that we are the proprietors, and if they would just listen to me, I'm sure every parent thinks that at some point. If that kid would just listen to me, and every kid thinks that also. Like if my parents would just listen to me, then there would be peace. You know, and you know, if my neighbor would just listen to me, if my town president would just listen to me, there would be. And the town president definitely thinks that if they would just listen to me, then there would be peace. So practically every human being at some point or other thinks that if they would just listen to me. But the bottom line is that if everybody would just listen to the message of Krishna, then there would be peace. And yeah, and it's not so that, you know, it's more so more than them listening to me. It's more so actually if we listen to others. If we really are able to listen to others, then they will naturally listen to us sooner or later. And even if they don't listen to us initially, you know, they'll feel heard. They'll feel heard, and they will actually, you know, they'll be more peace. But yeah, the mood of the Kshatriya is to protect and to give shelter. And the Pandavas were expert at it. I was reflecting about how the Pandavas, you know, they're always in the mood of the Kshatriyas, and they're always giving shelter, whereas the Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana were always in the mood of making sure that they were in power. That was their main, you know, interesting. Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra, they were good administrators. They did their job well, but they were attached, really attached to ruling. And whereas the Pandavas, they were attached to Krishna. And when Arjuna had the opportunity to choose Krishna for the war, Duryodhana was also there, right? And Duryodhana was sitting next to Krishna's head. They all came at more or less the same time. Duryodhana wanted to sit next to Krishna's head. He thought, when Krishna wakes up from his sleep, then he'll wake up and he'll see me, and I'll ask him, you know, for his army. I'll ask him to be on my side. And then Arjuna, like a younger brother and devotee, he was sitting at Krishna's feet, and he just was sitting there. And then when Krishna woke up, he just looked straight at Arjuna. He looked, woke up, and he saw Arjuna. And then he said, oh, Arjuna is here. And he said, what can I do for you? And then Duryodhana was like, I was here first. And I'm here to ask you to join my side in the war. And Krishna said, well, you have your younger brother here. You know, be a big brother and let your younger brother choose. And Duryodhana was very tense. At that point, he asked Arjuna, what would you like? And then he said, but each one of you can only have one thing. Either you can have my army or you can have me. So Arjuna very naturally said, Krishna, I want you on my side. And he also said, I won't pick up any weapons. Whoever side I'm on, I'm not going to fight. So he said, Krishna, obviously, I want you on my side. And at that point, Duryodhana was really happy. He was like, oh my God, I'm getting the army, Krishna's army. His name, I forget of the army. But so that's the materialistic tendency that we feel like, yeah, everything can be just won by strength. But actually, real strength is when you have Krishna on your side. And it doesn't matter what kind of material strength one has or not. And so that was the mood of the Pandavas. They were not just Kshatriyas, but they were Krishna conscious. They always had Krishna on their side, and they always wanted that. They didn't care about what weapons, they didn't care about, you know, how much army strength they had. The Pandava army was smaller, actually, than the Kaurava army, but they still won primarily because they had Krishna on their side. And later, after the war, there's this episode when Kali shows up. And I believe Yudhishthira Maharaj was in the palace and he had told Bhima that, you know, I'm going to rest, just don't let anyone in, you know, just tell them, just guard. And so Bhima was guarding and this Kali shows up. And Kali said, I have to meet Maharaj Yudhishthira, I have a few questions. And he said, well, Maharaj is not available, you just ask me your questions. So then Kali starts asking these questions. He says, the first one he says was, he said, there is this one big pot of water, or well, there's different versions, I think. And he says, this is one pot of water, and it fills these other four or five pots with the water. And when the water is poured back in the main pot, the water is less. How is that possible? So Bhima didn't have an answer. And then the next question he asked him was, there is this cow, and you know, I guess it's a riddle that there is this cow, and she's licking the calf so much. She's licking the calf so much that the calf is actually, you know, starts to bleed. And then Kali Yuga asks that. And then I saw this fence that was there. It was around this crops, but then I saw the fence itself was encroaching on the crops itself. So how is that possible? And then the fourth one he was saying that there's this huge boulder that was rolling down a mountain hill and it was taking down all these trees and everything. And then finally, but then it's hit this small blade of grass and it stopped. So how is that possible? And then Bhima Sena, he didn't have a reply. And then he went to Yudhishthira Maharaj and he said, oh, there's this person, he has all these questions, these riddles. At that point, Yudhishthira Maharaj got upset and he said, he pulled out his sword actually. And he said, where is this person? It's Kali personified. I'm going to go and kill him. And so and then he started asking, Bhima Sena asked Yudhishthira Maharaj these riddles. And he explained that the first one was, in Kali Yuga, a person gives so much to their family, gives so much to others, but then in return they don't get it back, they don't get the reciprocation. That's the sign of Kali Yuga, especially with parents and kids, when parents give a lot. And then the other one was, when the parents are just materially really, really attached to their kids and they just basically spoil the kids to, you know, they spoil them because they just are so attached or they're so attached they don't let the kids to grow up and be their own person. So they ruin them by attachment also. So that was one. And then the third one was the fence that I was thinking about with this pastime, that the fence is supposed to protect, you know, Kshatriyas are supposed to protect whatever is inside in their kingdom. But in Kali Yuga, instead of protecting, they actually start taking advantage. And we see that all the time, you know, like in Kali Yuga, those who are not really good leaders, you know, they're just simply take advantage. And it's amazing. In the first canto, Prabhupada writes in the purports about how political leaders, they just tell the people, we'll give you sense gratification. Whatever it is, we'll give it to you. And then the people, you know, vote them in power. And it keeps going, you know, keeps happening all the time. Doesn't matter which country, it just happens everywhere. They just tell the people, we'll give you sense gratification. You'll get free this, you'll get free that, everything. we'll make everything perfect. And then they vote them in power. But yeah, a real leader really sees, well, how can I help these people be more God conscious? How can I help these people be better persons at least, if not even God conscious? Like, you know, help them be better human being, and instill some character in people. But and then of course those kind of leaders who just tell people like, I'm going to give you sense gratification, what they're really doing are they're doing it for their own sense gratification. Right, and then they come and then they take advantage of the situation and take advantage of people. But then the fourth one, he said, Yudhishthira Maharaj said, well, that is the boon of Kali Yuga, this huge boulder that is rolling down that cannot be stopped. It's all our sins, you know, of the people in Kali Yuga that's going down and nothing can stop it. Nothing can, you know, relieve one of their previous sins and karma. But just the holy name, just by chanting the holy name, this huge boulder of our sinful activities can be stopped. So that is the boon of Kali Yuga, that one just by kirtan, by chanting Krishna's names. And it's in the Bhagavatam also, there's many verses like that, that in Kali Yuga, that is a famous verse, right? That Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults, but there's one good quality by kirtan, by chanting, congregational chanting of Krishna's names, that one can just, you know, go back to Godhead. And so, yeah, so Kshatriyas, yeah, they're meant to protect. And Sambhu Manu here is showing that by example. is protecting his daughter and giving support. And I was also thinking that, yeah, that's the best way for marriage. You know, it's not just by being completely independent. And I think more or less nobody can really be independent. You know, everybody seeks recommendations and so forth. And the best way is to have the blessings of our mentors and seniors and have them arrange something or introduce us to somebody. And so yeah, Manu here kindly did that for his daughter. And so yeah, that's the mood of a Kshatriya. Any thoughts or comments so far on anything? Yes, bro.
Sometimes we hear someplace I read that in Satyuga everyone is like Hamsa Swami.
Mm-hmm.
Even the caste system is not clearly defined then because everyone are on the Brahmanical platform.
Yeah.
And so sometimes, but then other times you hear Swayambhuva Manu when he was chatting and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, it seems a little contradictory, but at the same time, I don't know if you have more insight into that.
Well, from what I remember in Satyuga, everybody was Brahmanical, and in and everybody knew what the right thing was to do. And so when people know what the right thing to do is, you don't need a government normally, you don't need Kshatriyas. And but in this case, Swayambhuva Manu was there to rule the kingdom and to rule, earth. And they were, he's the Manu, so he's naturally a leader, he's naturally the king. And so that's how it was established at that point. But initially everybody was Brahmins, but then there was very little governance, very little, and even if the king was there, they didn't really have to go out and, kill all the rogues and thieves and so forth. That was not the case back then. But yeah, it's true. Initially, it started all this Brahmins, and then there was a small government, a small small role for the Kshatriyas. And then over time, it grew, and then then there was more farming, so the Vaishyas came, and they were using, then they started producing stuff from land, so Vaishyas came then, and then the Shudras came as age progressed. But initially it was all Brahminical. But there were still some kings, and the universe had to be filled up. So in that context, there were some, I guess, leaders and Kshatriyas and so forth. Yeah. Did you have any thoughts,
Prabhu? Do you remember, or anyone else remember, if there's some reference to this specific point? I know I read it somewhere, but I don't remember where,
Yeah, it's...
It's good to... No,
It's there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. I just can't remember now top of my head where exactly it is referenced, which canto. I want to say it's in the later cantos described how the varnas are there, but I can't remember exactly where. Yeah. Yeah. Did you have any thoughts, Prabhu?
It's not exactly black and white, because in Treta Yuga, Lord Ramchandra was ruling.
Mm-hmm.
75% supposed to be nice people.
Yeah.
But Ravana was there too.
Yeah, yeah.
In Satyajuga, all the Brahmanical quality, but then Hiranyakashipu, they're also in Satyajuga.
And in Satyajuga too, yeah.
So Prabhupada gave seventh canto, 14th chapter, one verse is there that even though the deity worship is mostly for the Dwapara Yuga, but it started in Treta Yuga. And Prabhupada gave a good logic that people lost their respect to the sadhus, and seeing that, immediately the saintly people, they started worshipping, because at least they will have some faith to God. They're losing faith to the devotees, but they will have. So even though it is said that in Dwapara Yuga deity worship, but it started in Treta Yuga. So we have to reconcile like this. Gaur Govinda Maharaj said, in your family, if four people are very nice devotee, you are in Satya Yuga. If you look at that verse, 11.5.36, what Kali Sabha Jayanti Arja Gunagga Sarabhagina Jatra Sankirtana Iva Sarvasatta Dabhulabhati. In Kali Yuga, those who are intelligent, they worship Kali Yuga.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Jatra Sankirtana Iva Sarvasatta Dabhulabhati. You can get anything you want through Sankirtan Jagra. So is Kali Yuga bad or worshipable?
Mm-hmm.
Depends who you are, how much
yeah.
you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. I think Sesha Prabhu has a point also. Thank you, Prabhu.
We're very fortunate here in Alachua, Gainesville area because Prabhupada outlined what a person should see when he sees a devotee.
Mm.
And he was preaching here in Gainesville. So we can take it personally. We're here, our service is here. So Prabhupada answered the reporter's question, how will I know your devotees? Same thing, when you see them, Priyavata Uttanapada being brought to show, this is the quality of the person that devotee is the sister of. So you're showing. The Prabhupada also asked us to show what it means to be a devotee. And that is, what does it mean?
Gentlemen.
Gentlemen. Ladies, ladies and gentlemen. That's how people should see us.
Mm.
So we can represent Prabhupada in that way that he can show. If he wants to show Gainesville what's happening with the devotees there, here, judged by their character.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Prabhu. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, and I was reflecting about how. Oh, did you have one? Oh, God, please.
It seems like this idea of taking shelter of Krishna,
mm-hmm.
you know, it looks different, or it is different, different times, like Narada Muni. I remember reading that. He, along with one of the demigods, was paying his obeisances to Hiranyakashipu.
Mm-hmm.
But he still had great faith in Krishna, or Govardhan Hill, you know, all they had great faith, but still the coward boys had their sticks up there just in case the hill would fall.
Yeah.
So sometimes, like, even in present times, it's difficult because things look so bad. I mean, there's so much seemingly unnecessary war,
mm-hmm.
and you know, taxes, just like Prabhupada predicts, taxes are, they'll get worse and worse, that people will go to the hills because of it. So you want to just talk for a second about taking shelter of Krishna and how that works?
How that works? I feel like it's a very big topic, yeah. But yeah, I was... You never mentioned war, and I was thinking about, yeah, all these, yeah, there's so much war mongering that goes on in this world. And I was thinking of, you know, I have family now in Iran, and my wife's mother is there in Iran, and she was telling us that, yeah, they live in an island, she lives in an island, and the island keeps getting bombed every day. And, but she's a devotee, and I was appreciating that. She was offered to move out from her house because it's close to the airport. She was offered that, you know, move to this other apartment. She said, no, I'm fine. And she just said, you know, she's just peaceful or happy with where she is. And she just sees, I was reflecting about how when Prabhupada was in Calcutta and it was being bombed during World War II, he just saw everything as Krishna's arrangement. And it's true, and I think today's quote also, Mother Mukhi was reading that there is no happy or peaceful place in the material world. Wherever we go, there's going to be some kind of bomb of different shape and form. And so she has come to this realization that these bombs, it's Krishna. And all, whatever is happening by his will, and it will hopefully be for the best in the future. And so, yeah, that's the... It makes me think of the six symptoms of surrender, Sharanagati, where that, yeah, one has that hope. One has that hope that, yeah, to depend on Krishna, that yeah, everything will be for the better. And the Brajavasis also, yeah, Nectar of Devotion, I believe, is mentioned that yeah, they were just totally dependent on Krishna. There was like when the Govardhan Hill pastime happened, when Indra was showering all this rain, and they just ran to Krishna. They said, "Krishna, please save us. You know, you are our only shelter." And yeah, it's interesting with the Brajavasis because they see him as the shelter, but they also see him as this young boy who they love and care for. And so yeah, when they're under the hill, they're like, "Oh, let's help Krishna make sure the hill's not gonna fall or put these sticks up." So they have this loving role. They still seek all the shelter from this young boy, and at the same time they're covered over and they don't realize Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And yeah, taking shelter of Krishna, you know, it just, for me, I feel like the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, one of my mentors had told me early on, he said it's very simple, you know, Krishna's God, everything depends on him, we're his servant. He said, but we have to just go deeper in that realization. And I feel like, yeah, as we go in our lives, that realization just goes deeper and deeper and deeper, and the bombs of material life, material world keep coming, and then we realize more and more, like, actually, our only shelter is Krishna. But yeah, it might look different for different people at different times. But sooner or later we just realize, like, yeah, there's nothing really we can depend on, and whatever is happening is to expedite. It's like Narada Muni, his service of expediting us going back to Godhead, or expediting for Krishna's pastimes to happen faster and faster. So yes, like whatever is happening, it's okay. It's a blessing from Krishna. It's a blessing from perhaps, yeah. By that, to expedite our journey back to Godhead, or not just our journey back to Godhead, but expedite our, for us to really come back to Krishna internally also, to realize that he's the only shelter, we can only really count on him. But yeah, anyway, those are some thoughts. Do you have any thoughts, Matadi? Please share. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We have to think like that everything is being arranged by Krishna, even though you can't always say that. People wouldn't appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, they wouldn't.
Most of the
time. Yeah, yeah.
Why can't we appreciate? There is a verse in the first canto, 7th chapter.
This is wonderful. This
is. No anadesti kalim samrat sarangai vasarabhut yatra kusalani asusiddhanti. Parikshit Maharaj had Kali in front of him. He could have killed him and done with him. Why didn't he kill? That question raised. That verse answered. And Prabhupada gave a beautiful purpose. I'm just giving a little note. Prabhupada said that in Kali Yuga, when people will be so disturbed, they will take shelter of the holy name. And kusalani asu siddhanti, very quickly they will get the highest result which they could not get in thousands of years meditation. So is Kali bad? No, it's good.
Yeah, it's good.
They will not even come to become devotee.
Yeah, it's true. It's better to be on our toes versus, like, you know, be complacent. So in that sense, Kali Yuga is good, that it brings about all this strife and war and hypocrisy, but it's good in that sense that, yeah, it always keeps, is one shock after another. I think Kalakantra often says that material life is one shock after another. And so, and it's just to kind of keep us on our toes and be alert. But yeah, and even the Pandavas, there's a purport in that, I can't remember which canto, but there's a purport, and Prabhupada himself raises this question, like, Pandavas were so close to Krishna. They had Krishna there personally, but they had to go through so much. And even Bhishma Dev, I think, you know, after the war, when Yudhishthira Maharaj came to him, he was just so sad. He said, "You Pandavas, you know, you were so pure, so pious, you're great Vaishnava. You had to go through so much, you know." And so Krishna, Prabhupada asks that question, why did the Pandavas have to go through so much? And then he answers it and he says that they went through so much because Krishna also wanted to glorify his devotees. He wanted to show how his devotees act in times of distress, how they act in times of distress and stress, and how they take shelter of him, so and then to glorify him. And I was thinking that Prabhupada also, of course, went through so much. And I was thinking, Krishna wanted to glorify Prabhupada. He had to go through so many troubles. Yeah, it's interesting because, especially in the 60s and 70s, there were so many gurus coming from India. Somehow they would just, you know, get... I don't think nobody came on a ship. I think they just came on the plane. They got the plane ticket sponsored. But Prabhupada had to go sit at Sindhya, I believe. I forget her. Sumati Muraji, right? That was her name. And he had to go sit at her steps outside her office waiting for her. And I remember listening to a lecture by Radhanath Maharaj, and he mentioned that Prabhupada had met Sumati Muraji in Kurukshetra in the 40s. And he was just there. There was some big festival. He was there, and Sumati Muraji actually noticed him, and she approached him, and she just saw that here's a sadhu. And they had talked briefly, and she had given him her card. And he held on to that visiting card for like almost 2 decades. And Prabhupada was just so expert, so resourceful, you know. And just even from a material perspective, you know, just so resourceful. And he had that visiting card, and he showed up at her office, you know, almost 2 decades later. And he asked for, he asked if she could send him on the cargo ship. And then of course that journey itself was not easy. And then when he came here also, it wasn't easy. But yeah, when I read that purport, I was reflecting. Prabhupada also went through so much, and Krishna arranged that so that, yeah, it's glorious, you know, what he did. Anyways, I'm forgetting the original point. But yeah, the devotees go through so much also, and sometimes Krishna is arranging that so that others can see that, yeah, the devotees are so glorious and we should follow in their footsteps of great devotees. Any other thoughts, comments? Yes, bro, go ahead. Oh, yeah. They probably come. He came on a ship.
They were never able to do anything, accomplish anything much.
Yeah, so yeah.
I think it was Vivekananda as a yogi, Paramahamsa yogi.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. A while ago, I think Vivekananda even came in like 1800s, maybe even late 1800s. But yeah.
That would have been a ship too, right?
Oh yeah, that was a ship. Yeah, that I remember. That was a ship. Yeah, but yeah, and there were so many Bhagavad Gitas before Prabhupada came, but nobody was really becoming a devotee of Krishna, which is the whole point of the Bhagavad Gita. It's only after Prabhupada's Gita actually people took up Krishna consciousness. But yeah, and one pastime I was thinking from judging book by its cover, I was reflecting in the Chaitanya Charitamrita when Mukundatta took Gadadhar Pandit to see Pundarik Vidyanidhi, his great devotee. And initially, Gadadhar Pandit, he was a bit shocked to see Pundarik Vidyanidhi. So, oh, who is this person? He had like, you know, slick hair, and people were fanning him, and I think he was chewing on something, he was eating something luxurious, I guess. And he was just taken aback. He had all these cushions and pillows next to him, and people were singing, and I was like, why did Mukundatta bring me to see this person? who is this person? And Mukundatta noticed that, oh, that's what, he could tell that's what Gadadhar Pandit's thinking. So he said that, he spoke a verse from the Bhagavatam, Aho Bakiyam Stanakala Putam. Yeah, that's famous verse where it's, actually it's in the third canto, actually. Vidura is saying that, who else can I take shelter of but Krishna, who gave shelter to the she-demon Putana who came to kill him. And so when he heard that verse, Pundarik Vidyanidhi, he just went into ecstasy. He started crying and, you know, just went into ecstasy. And that's when Gadadhar Pandit was able to realize, oh, he's a great Vaishnava. And I was just thinking in this context that, yeah, Kardama Muni, you know, Swayambhuva Manu didn't see that, oh, who is the sadhu out in the wilderness? You know, can he really take care of my daughter? You know, what does he really have? He didn't look at it that way. He was able to see that, yeah, here's this great personality. And so Gadadhar Pandit also was able to realize, great, this is a great devotee. And then he, of course, took initiation from him also. And so, yeah, oftentimes, yeah, we want to see the character of the person. We want to see their Krishna consciousness. We want to see not just externals, but we want to see, yeah, in the Nectar of Devotion is explained that, yeah, a great devotee is always engaged in Krishna's service. You know, they're constantly, constantly engaged in Krishna's service. And it doesn't say that one, you know, that they always just The external symptoms are might be there, might not be there, but it's really the internal Krishna consciousness that we should see in others and their character. But yeah, that's what Swayambhu Manu is doing. But anyways, yeah, I just wanted to share that pastime. What else? Any other thoughts, comments? Yes, Madhumati Matsudhi.
I was appreciating your talk about Narad Muni's other role. You know, I always thought Narad Muni is a preacher, but I never saw him as somebody who arranges marriages and being in a renounced order. And I was thinking how Srila Prabhupada, so it's so nice to see that here Narad Muni has set that example, because Prabhupada writes in one of the purports, or at least he expressed about how people are criticizing him, meaning his godfathers were criticizing him for taking part in his disciples' marriages, you know, him being in the renounced order. So I was thinking, hey, this is a perfect example about Narad Muni. As I said, I never thought about it, so I was appreciating that.
Yeah.
Prabhupada followed in Narad Muni's footsteps. For what? For preaching purposes, yeah?
Yeah.
Narad Muni is a preacher, and he did that, so Prabhupada did that as well.
And
take care of his disciples as a spiritual master, as a kshatriya in the sense of protecting his dependents, you know, or his children. So in all sense, it was his duty to, in the sense of taking care of his disciples. But yeah, but even Narad Muni, he did that. So there you are.
Yeah. And I remember another purport where Prabhupada writes that when Narad Muni was cursed by Daksha, then he cannot stay in one place. And Prabhupada says, perhaps I've also been cursed by it, by my disciples' parents, because I don't seem to be able to stay in one spot for more than 3 days. Yeah. So yeah, I guess he has many parallels with Narada Muni. Yeah. Any other thoughts, comments, anything else? All right. And here then. Vantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki.